Speaking of observers, former Jedi Tahiri Vela has flatly refused to allow her observer to accompany her. Vela's unusual legal status makes her opposition to the government regulation an interesting one, and the temple's own lead counsel has accepted her case as she and the government countersue each other. Master Sebatine, Jedi Sarkin, Jedi Tetley, please report to me for new assignments. That is all.
As the assembly broke up, Jaina ducked around a column, the better to remain unseen by her observer, and made her way stealthily to a back set of stairs. Moments later, she was two levels down and entering a conference room little used because of its low ceiling and uninvitingly dark wall color. Jag, inside, waited until the door was sealed behind her before taking her in his arms.
You've shaken your pursuit?
He's so friendly. It would be a shame to kill him. It was a joke, but even in jest, the notion of cutting down Dab, who so resembled her brother Anakin, of killing, in a sense, a second brother, sent a shudder through her.
This has got to end. The sneaking around?
Oh, I'm fine with the sneaking around, she smiled, her humor restored. But to actually be followed while I'm sneaking around, I hate it.
You could always resign from the Order. Come away with me to the Empire and set up that rival Jedi school.
Stop saying that. It's beginning to tempt me. She spoke in a more serious tone.
Jag, I'm the Sword of the Jedi. I'm the defender of this order. Not of some rival order, some startup school. My fate is here. Your fate was that you would live a restless life and never know peace. How can you accept that for yourself?
What if I didn't? What if I had rejected it, retired as a Jedi, decided to enjoy myself after the Dark Nest mess? I'd have been off on a vacation world when Jason became the force he turned into. What if I was the only thing that could stop him, and I never did?
It didn't happen that way.
No, but the next one might. If I just shed my responsibilities and run off to the Remnant to play school teacher, what happens when the sword is needed next?
Something occurred to her.
You want to spend more time with me? Over the years instead of just the next few days or weeks?
You know I do.
Then resign as the head of state of the Empire. There are plenty of men and women eager to take that position.
He was silent a long moment.
I can't.
Because it's your responsibility.
His yes was almost inaudible.
So don't try to convince me to abandon mine.
All right.
We'll try to make this work. If we can't, well, at least we'll have this time.
He leaned down to kiss her, but her comlink beeped, a distinctive pattern of two-then-two tones. Jaina sagged, and she let her forehead thud down into his chest.
What is it?
Dab. The observers all have to run checks on their Jedi twice a day at random times, to make sure we're where we're supposed to be. I have to run upstairs and show him I'm still here.
I could kill him for you.
I said it before. Don't tempt me.
Aboard Jade Shadow, Doran Space.
Ben decided that Doran was just about the ugliest inhabited planet he could remember, and he had seen quite a lot of them. It was also one of the strangest star systems in his experience. Even after having read up on it in advance of arrival, he found that foreknowledge did not reduce the effect of seeing the system through Jade Shadow's viewports. The Doran Sun was a small, orange thing, and it was situated directly between two large and proximate black holes. The net effect, looking at the system from a stopping point less than a light year away, was of seeing a dim and distant light illuminating a precarious path with bottomless cliffs on either side. Except Ben, smoothing down the hair on the back of his neck, did not perceive the black holes as dangerous drops, but as lifeless eyes staring at him.
Kind of gets to you, doesn't it?
His father looked up from the task of inputting the last hyperspace jump. Calculations here had to be very precise. Situated between two such powerful gravity wells, the Doran system was very complex, and any mathematical error was even more likely than usual to endanger a ship. Luke nodded. Black holes are an interesting astronomical phenomenon to scientists, and a vaguely unsettling image for most other people. But Force users and Force sensitives have a real dislike or dread of them.
Why?
His father shrugged. The Force derives from life. Even death is not all that disturbing to a Force user, since it is a part, a necessary consequence of life. Black holes are something else, a cessation outside of life. Maybe the way they draw in all energy and trap it forever runs against our instincts. I'm not sure. I do know that the Force-sensitive children we hit at shelter during the Yuuzhan Vong War did not like being in the Maw, surrounded on all sides by black holes. You're too young to remember, but the Jedi caretakers at shelter said there was a lot of crying.
Did I do a lot of crying?
I don't think so. You were pretty much shut off from the Force in those days.
Well, good.
Luke grinned and returned his attention to his calculations. Ready to jump in 10 seconds. 5, 4. When space untwisted around them, they were well within the Doran system. The sun ahead was bigger, but no more cheerful, and its dull hue seemed almost dirty. Ben could see stars above and below the sun, but looking rightward and leftward through the yacht's ports, there was nothingness. No welcoming gleam of stars. He suppressed a shudder. It took a few minutes for Luke to raise Doran's starship control on the comm. The distant officer spoke Basic with an odd, slightly muffled accent, but she rapidly authorized Luke to land his craft at the spaceport in the capital city of Dorshan, and assured him that replacement air bottles for his breath masks were readily available for purchase. As Doran grew in the forward viewport, it became no more appealing to Ben. Dark and mottled, it had a gloomy aspect to it. But he reached out with the Force and felt no such emotion emanating from it. In fact, it was as alive as any low-population world he had visited, and far cheerier under the surface than the malevolent Ziost. He relaxed. Doran was not a place of hidden dread and evil intent. They slid through a murky atmosphere and descended toward a twilight city of buildings that were small and isolated by Coruscant standards. Many were domes, ziggurats, trapezoids, all forms much wider at the base than at the summit. And Ben was reminded of what he had read of this world, that its architecture, and even to some extent the abilities of the Baran-Do sages, had developed in response to the ferocious storms that frequently swept across the planet's surface. Ben decided that these squat, unlovely buildings were ideally suited to a population that needed to hunker down and wait out bad weather. And perhaps they weren't so unlovely after all. Even from a great altitude, he had seen the city as a sea of lights blazing in many colors. And as they got low enough to glimpse details on the face of the buildings, illuminated by those lights, Ben saw the Keldor geometric and organic patterns painted onto those buildings, disguising their rudimentary shapes with patterns of well-matched colors. Some structures bore tawny browns and golds in color waves that suggested sandstorms, while others were in dappled aquatic hues that would probably have convinced someone standing beside them that he was resting at the bottom of a shallow bay. Then they were over the spaceport. Each building had a domed terminal or hangar, with simple arrows on the roofs pointing to a specific landing circle or set of circles. Luke set the Jade Shadow down on a circle of permacrete next to a smaller white and tan dome. Then he taxied slowly on repulsor lifts, following blinking lights embedded in the permacrete surface, into the adjacent domed hangar, whose doors slid closed and sealed once the yacht was settled. Inside, the hangar was well lit, but bare. Ben unbuckled and rose.
This place isn't as ugly as I thought at first.
No, it isn't. Luke pointed at Ben's seat. Sit.
Huh?
Post-flight checklist.
Oh.
Exasperated, Ben sat again and brought up his checklist on the monitor.
Engines cooling within standard rates. I noticed there's no one here.
No one here? Check.
Running engine diagnostics now. And the hangar doors are...
Ben bounced a comm query from his control board to the hangars.
Locked. We're locked in.
Locked in. Check.
Stop that.
Luke smiled. We're supposed to stay here until they complete a routine inspection.
Inspection?
Ben felt a touch of outrage. You're the Grand Master of the Jedi Order.
And the brother-in-law of a smuggler.
Well, your rank should count for something. Prelim diagnostics run checks out in the green.
Full diagnostics on all systems, please.
Ben initiated the program. As he did so, he saw an oval section of wall stretch itself toward them, elongating slowly toward a side coupling ring.
Here they come.
Ben and Luke met them at the airlock. It cycled open to reveal two humanoids, lean to the point of emaciation, dressed in black robes decorated in vertical black and sky blue striping patterns. They were bald, with intelligent eyes that seemed very human, but their lower faces were obscured by breath masks. One carried an apparatus in a black backpack. A metal cable ran from it to a wand-like device, numerous sensor intakes along its length, which he held in his hand. The other had only a small card reader. The one with the card reader extended a hand, palm up.
Identicards, please.
His basic was unaccented. Ben handed his card to the Keldor an instant after his father. The inspector slid each one for a moment into his reader.
I am Lieutenant Dorse, Customs. This is Sergeant Vault. He will conduct a brief inspection of your craft. Are all compartments accessible?
Luke nodded. They are. Again, Ben felt the urge to protest, to tell them,
don't you understand? This is Luke Skywalker. Why are you bothering?
But his father seemed unperturbed, so he pretended to be as well. Still, he wondered what good it would do to travel under a name as famous as his father's if it didn't at least lubricate the wheels of bureaucracy. The second Keldor disappeared aft, waving his sensor wand. Now Dorse began his ritual interrogation.
Purpose of visit to Doran?
Research, Luke said. We seek an audience with the Baron Dos Sages.
Information brokerage, then?
Luke frowned, perplexed.
I don't think so. I didn't plan to offer any credits for the information I'm looking for, nor would I charge any for information I provide.
No trade goods?
Both Jedi shook their heads. The Keldor hesitated, then handed back the identicards.
Tourism, then.
There was an air of finality to his decision.
Will you require accommodations?
No. For convenience sake, we'll be keeping quarters aboard the yacht.
The Keldor nodded knowingly. There was something in the gesture, as if he had concluded long before that celebrities were tight with their credits, and was happy for Luke Skywalker to reinforce the stereotype. That irritated Ben further. The sergeant returned and spoke a few words to Dorse in what must have been the native tongue of Doran. Dorse nodded.
All personal effects within categorical limits. Enjoy your stay on Doran.
Thank you.
Luke waved agreeably as they re-entered the airlock. Ben frowned.
This is worse than traveling incognito. They acted like they'd never heard of you.
Luke smiled, and there was just a touch of taunt to it. You've been around, Ben. Wasn't that much nicer than arriving somewhere and finding that everyone is trying to shoot you?
Well, yes.
Don't get too used to the benefits of fame, son. You'll find yourself making mistakes in order to regain them when they're taken away from you.
I guess.
Now get on the planetary data grid and find us city maps, city directories, the location of the Baron Doe headquarters, contact names for our datapads. I'll check out our breath masks to make sure they're up to the job.
Right.
Ben returned to the cockpit, wondering if, in deciding to accompany his father, he had somehow consigned himself to 10 years of dullness. No, that was a child's perspective. He had to continue thinking like an adult, like a Jedi. Even a Jedi in exile.
Chapter 12. Calrissian Nunba Mines, Kessel.
The pit, Han said, is what happens when an atmosphere plant sits on one spot for a few years. It digs up stones that have oxygen and nitrogen in them. It cracks the stone, spitting the dust out through the hole onto an ever-growing sandhill and spewing the gases up into the sky. Meanwhile, the hole underneath gets bigger and bigger until they have to dismantle the facility and move it. On Kessel, sometimes those pits punch their way into cavern systems.
And if explorers find spice, a mine is born, Leia said.
Han nodded gloomy. Below, The shaft was ringed by a set of lights indicating a specific mine level. Descending past it, their vehicle lights revealed a large metal door in the side of the shaft just above the illuminating ring, suggesting that a side tunnel continued beyond the door. Many meters farther down, they could see another such ring. On the passenger side monitor, Leia brought up a schematic map of the mine complex.
So, let me get this straight. The energy spiders feed on energy? Drain it right out of living things?
Uh-huh.
And they also spin webs to trap their prey?
Well, mostly they sort of spit the webs up on the rock surfaces. They don't usually spin them in the open air. Though they sometimes spin lines to climb.
Where does the mass for the webs come from? And the mass to let the spiders grow? Not from matter-energy conversion. They couldn't be absorbing that much energy.
Han shook his head.
They eat a certain amount of stone. Kessel is laced with veins of rill, and rill is one of the major components of glitterstim.
Neither as effective nor as rare a spice as glitterstim, rill was a mineral found on several worlds, notably Ryloth, home planet of the Twi'leks. As information about the energy spiders had been released over the years by Lando's mining company, Han had kept up with it, out of a sense of horrified fascination. They passed another two light rings during that exchange. Leia tracked their progress on her diagram.
How low are we going to go?
All the way to the bottom, or until you feel something.
Nothing yet.
We could just go back up again, grab Alana and go home.
I feel something.
What?
Irritation. Stop trying to slither out of this mission.
Han sighed. They descended in silence for a while. Eventually, the speeder's lights illuminated rough stone all around and below. The end of the shaft, and there were no tunnels, artificial or natural, branching from it. Han increased power to the repulsors, and they rose toward the next light ring up, the lowest tunnel entrance. As they hovered outside the metal door, Leia touched a control on the board before her. The door slid open, revealing a dark, tile-floored chamber beyond.
Still, Han said, it's much better than the first time I was down here. Doors open when you want them to, and the mine manager gives you drinks and weapons instead of sending someone to kill you.
That's progress.
The tile-floored chamber was a ready room. Banks of lockers held equipment the miners would use in their work. There was no one present. Lando had said he was keeping all personnel out of the mine until the situation was resolved, and for some reason Han found the lack of people additionally unsettling. If he and Leia had to run from a monster they couldn't kill, there would be no nasty guards to distract the beasts. Han preferred to have slower-moving people behind him in situations like that. They moved out of the ready room into a chamber where mine cars waited. The little train of six open-top cars sat on the dusty stone floor, but if activated, they would rise on repulsor lifts, resembling a flying centipede. The cars looked like original equipment from Han's first visit to Kessel. Another large metal door at the far end of the chamber slid open at Leia's transmitted signal, giving them access to the mine tunnels themselves.
Don't worry, Leia said. This isn't one of the feeding regions. Reduces the odds that we'll run into a spider here.
Feeding regions?
The last door slid shut behind them. Now only the speeder's lights kept total darkness at bay. Hair tried to stand up on the back of Han's neck. He smoothed it down.
To help control the movements of the energy spiders and give the miners some predictable sights to look for spice, Lando and Nia Nunba send processed rill and incendiary devices into specific shafts in rotation. While the spiders are eating in one area and spinning new webs there, the miners go to areas where they were before and get fresh spice. This, Leia gestured, indicating their surroundings, is not one of the tunnels in rotation.
Oh, that's on the map?
No, the map just says where the feeding zones are right now. I looked up what it meant in the prospectus Tendra gave me.
Prospectus?
You know, a business plan document, used among other things to persuade people to invest.
Han looked at her alarmed.
Did you want to invest in this?
Leia sighed.
No, it was a convenient source of information, and that's why Tendra gave it to me. But I suppose I could invest in all the businesses that have brought you so much happiness over the years. For instance, Jabba the Hutt's trade empire.
He's dead. You killed him.
Yes, but his business lives on. Or how about some of the Death Star manufacturing subcontractors?
Stop it.
Maybe just the folk who make trash compactors. Everyone needs trash compactors. Oh, and frozen in carbonite dream vacations.
Han just gritted his teeth, determined to wait her out. Ahead, the tunnel forked. Leia consulted her map, tracing the two routes with a fingertip.
This one, the lower one, Lando has marked as one of the places Tendra and Nian planted sensors. This other one, which doesn't go as deep but heads off westward at an odd angle, hasn't been recently explored. Let's try that one.
Is that just random interest or a presentiment in the Force?
Random.
She paused, and a look of mild surprise crossed her face.
Both, maybe.
Han turned left into the tunnel she indicated.
City of Dorshan, Doran.
Ben did not often feel like a complete outsider, but this world seemed bent on convincing him that he was. It started with his breath mask, a full-face rig that kept the planetary atmosphere, mostly helium, with some other gases in the mix, at bay. It was attached to a backpack rig that included canisters of oxygen-nitrogen mix and a converter that broke a proportion of the carbon dioxide emerging from the human's lungs back into its component elements, reintroducing the oxygen into the breathing mix. A human could go for most of a day on a planet like this on only one charge. But Ben wasn't impressed with the rig's convenience. It was like being chained to his luggage. Then there were the people. Luke had decided that he and Ben would walk to the Baron Doe Sage's temple, as the map showed it to be not too far for a leg-stretching hike. And so Ben had the opportunity to see hundreds of the Keldors in the spaceport terminal building and on the streets. Like the two who had performed the inspection, most were tall and angular. Unlike the inspectors, they were barefaced. And what faces they had! Round, bald heads, sunken eyes, narrow ridge-like noses that looked to Ben like failed attempts at becoming birds' beaks, and large, toothless mouths that looked like they belonged on very old humans. Ben tried not to stare at every face he passed, but he couldn't help himself, and did not like himself for the conclusion he reached. When he and his father arrived at the street where the temple was to be found, a street almost free of speeders but still trafficked by pedestrians, and they were no longer near any crowds of natives, he said, "Dad, these are not a pretty people." Luke considered. From a certain point of view, perhaps.
It sort of bothers me that I see them that way.
Well, you know the answer to that. What's one of the first things you learned in training to be a Jedi?
Don't cut off your own head with your lightsaber.
After that?
Your eyes can deceive you. Be mindful of your feelings. Girls are fun but dangerous. Lando has extra cards up his sleeve.
Well, the truth is in there somewhere.
Tell you what.
If you think it's wrong for you to think of them as ugly, just think of how you look to them.
Luke made a sweeping gesture, taking in his son from head to foot. Short, squat, unlined skin, a nose that puffs up like a rodent, tiny little mouth with jagged white things in it, a horrible shrub-like growth on your head. Ben laughed.
This from the man who's worn a bowl-cut hairstyle almost all his adult life?
You're young, Ben. You'll learn to see with wiser eyes. And if you deliberately set out to do that, it'll be faster.
The stretch of the city between the spaceport and their destination had been thick with smaller buildings, the exterior signs in the Keldor language suggesting that most were businesses. Now the buildings were larger, some set within walled enclosures. Ben checked his data pad, using a comfortingly familiar planetary positioning system to compare their location with the maps, and found they were only 40 meters from their objective. He pointed ahead and across the street.
There!
What he was looking at was clearly an estate. One large, ziggurat-shaped building, each of its four levels darker than the ones below it, graduating from thundercloud gray-black down to sky blue, surrounded by two-story outbuildings in similar colors, all within a wall made up of black-wrought durasteel posts with transparent steel sheets laid across them. The transparent steel was smooth and a little uneven, and Ben could visualize, perhaps as a tiny vision in the Force, Baron Doe apprentices polishing it over the years, removing minute scratches had caused the transparent material to become slightly worn and misshapen. Through it, as he and Luke advanced, the building seemed to distort and sway. They stopped before the gates, which were ajar and undefended. A path of red-orange flagstones led from there to the steps rising into the main building. The double front doors were also open, with light streaming out from the interior. Luke looked at the approach and grinned.
What's so funny?
Tradition. You'll see. Come on. Luke put on his serene Grand Master face, made sure his robes were smoothed into presentability, and headed in. With a quick check of his own hair, Ben followed, a pace back and to the right. The entrance chamber of the Temple of the Baron Doe Sages was large and imposing. Black stone walls reached up more than 6 meters. White stone columns against those walls, rounded and slightly narrower at the base than the top, not only suggested that the ceiling would be kept at a distance, but helped offset the darkness of the decor. The ceiling was of a blue-black stone and sparkled like a starry sky, while the floor was a brown permacrete polished smooth, perhaps even waxed. It was all dimly lit by blue glow rods at floor level against the walls. Ben nodded, instantly grasping the intent of the decorative style. Sky above, ground below, darkness of the black holes to either side. Columns suggesting the constructions or intents of living beings keeping those nightmarish celestial anomalies at bay. Immediately opposite the main entrance was a raised platform with steps leading up to it. It was only a meter higher than the floor itself, and there was no furniture on it. Ben had half expected a throne of some sort, or a circle of seats like in the Master's Chamber at the Jedi Temple. There was a Keldor woman standing on the platform, her robes white with curved dotted line decorations in red and black. She was staring off at the left wall as Luke and Ben entered, and did not react to their arrival. No other doors or hallways seemed to exit this chamber, but the square sheets of black stone on the walls, fitting together almost seamlessly, could hide a dozen exits. Luke drew to a halt 2 meters from the platform steps and waited. Ben stood silently beside him. The Keldor woman turned toward them. She spoke, her basic lightly flavored with a lilting accent.
Who comes to us?
I am Luke Skywalker, a Jedi. This is my companion, Jedi Ben Skywalker.
Ah, famous names.
The woman tilted her head as she studied them.
My name is not so famous. I am Tistura Pawn.
Luke nodded a greeting. I am pleased to meet you.
What is the business you bring before us?
I am investigating the travels of a former student of mine. I'm trying to determine whether he came here and what he might have learned.
Your student's name?
Jason Solo.
Also a famous name.
Tistura Pawn scratched at her nasal ridge.
I think these are questions for the mistress of our order, Tyla Mong.
Luke nodded.
Then I wish to speak with your mistress at her convenience. And whom shall I say wishes to see her?
Luke hesitated so briefly that Ben suspected only he detected it. As I said before, Jedi Luke Skywalker and Jedi Ben Skywalker.
Ah, there is a puzzlement. How can I go before my mistress and say that the famous Luke Skywalker is here, when I cannot prove that you are indeed he?
The faintest trace of a smile appeared on Luke's face.
You could take my word for it.
A word that is beyond price if you are indeed Luke Skywalker, and without measurable worth if you are not.
I do resemble my Hollows, somewhat, if my family is to be believed.
As would any truly skillful imposter.
She spread her arms, palms upraised, a very human gesture of helplessness.
I fear we are at an impasse. Unless...
Yes.
Well, I would stand no chance in combat with the true Luke Skywalker.
Luke smiled outright. Or any sufficiently well-trained imposter.
That is not a given. Regardless, were you to defeat me, I would acknowledge that your claim to be Luke Skywalker was possibly true, and convey your message to my mistress.
Luke nodded.
A useful solution, but impractical. Why?
Because you are not worthy to face me. Ben felt his eyes widen. He forced himself to resume an impassive, sabacc-playing expression, but his father's words baffled him. They sounded so agreeable in tone, yet were more arrogant than anything he had ever heard his father say. Luke continued.
Still, if a former apprentice of mine can best you, then the same conditions apply.
He turned to Ben.
Son, go beat her up.
Ben froze as if his father's gaze were that of some paralytic monster from myth. After a moment, he was able to clear his throat, covering his confusion, and said,
Sir?
Go on up there and knock her down a few times.
Yes, sir.
His mind reeling, Ben strode up the steps to stand before Tistura Pawn, and he wondered for a moment if Valen Horn had been right, if the Jedi he knew were suddenly being replaced by impersonators. Tistura Pawn gave Luke a look Ben interpreted as scornful.
I hope you have another child, so that a healthy one can be in rotation while this one lies bruised and crying.
Luke turned his back on them.
Just fight. Let me know when it's over.
Tistura Pawn lashed out at Ben, a left-handed, flat-fisted blow straight toward his face. She did not look at him beforehand, gave him no visual warning of her intent, but feeling her channeling her power through the Force, he swayed out of the way, the blow snapping into place just to the side of his nose. He trapped her wrist with his left hand and struck at her elbow with his right. A hard blow, but not a savage one. It hyperextended her joint, but did not break it. She gave a sudden yank and was instantly meters away, shaking her arm as if to cast the pain free. Ben sidestepped to take the center of the platform and dropped into a defensive posture. He wouldn't make the same mistake Tistura Pawn had. If her role here was to challenge every visitor, or just every visitor claiming to be a famous Jedi, she'd probably be good at her job. She charged him, arms flailing. He sidestepped, reaching out for her right hand, intending to give it a twist and push to launch her past him out of control. But the wildness of her attack was all show. Leaping past, she kicked at his midsection, a fast, hard blow. He continued his own maneuver into a spin when the Keldor connected. The force of the blow was reduced. It still hurt, her skinny legs striking home like a cane, but he was merely forced to step back, his gut stinging where she'd hit him. He did not fall. Tistura Pawn hit the platform in a practiced roll and came up on her feet at its edge. She spun, ready again. Ben spared a glance at his father. Luke still had his back to the fight, and looked as though he were digging dirt out from under a fingernail. Tistura Pawn advanced more carefully, short steps, her left side forward, hands up and ready in a classic martial posture. Ben mimicked it. He wasn't sure how long he should go on letting her demonstrate her skills and tactics as the fight's aggressor. The longer he did so, gauging her skill, the longer he gave her to develop a successful strategy. But neither